This feature has been brought to you by Slot Foundation, which needs your support to continue projects like these. Information on this recording and access to other recordings is available online at slot.org.
It's a pleasure to be here, but it's also a burden to become a representative of a country and all the art production that's taking place there. I would like to begin by introducing how the video works were compiled or collected. I say collected because it wasn't really a selection, it was really a collection. Because there's very few artists working with video art in Pakistan. Largely, artists are trained in more traditional media of painting, sculpture, printmaking, photography. And it's very recently that people have started using technology, although technology for video making has been available for a very long time, much easier and it's much more accessible. But it's still very much in the hands of the media somehow. But younger artists graduating from schools or within art schools now are producing a lot more digital works as they are anywhere else. So for this compilation, it was really, you know, picking up works from the small group of works available. Having said that, there were lots of connections that and ideas that dialogued with each other, and that's why we decided to call it The Divided Self. And I'll talk more about that by giving a brief history of the, you know, a lot of the artists working in these video works that you see today are working with ideas of identity in one way or another. If I, you know, if you speak about it very broadly, one could categorize it as that. And it comes very much from the country, which is quite young. Pakistan was born in 1947. And one way to look at it is that it gained independence from British colonial rule. But in Pakistan, it's that time is recognized more as partition. It's not called independence, but it's called partition because while we were gaining independence from British rule, we were also being partitioned from India, which was the bigger country. So Pakistan was a new country, and it really had no identity, whereas India remained India. So that happened in 1947. And then in 1971, we were partitioned again into two parts. One part became Bangladesh, and one part remained Pakistan. So it became a smaller country still. In 1978, a military leader called Ziaul Haq took over the country and looked towards implementing Sharia rule, which was a religious law in the country, and the whole process of Islamization began in Pakistan as late as 1978. With that, what happened was that the whole our South Asian identity, which was 4,000 years of history as part of South Asia, changed, and very deliberately the government looked towards process of Arabization began, and we became more aligned to the Middle East rather than South Asia. And it was very, very deliberate, and it impacted everything from language to dress to food to to laws, to how people behaved, what they say, what they don't say, where they travel, everything. And it happened so slowly, but for me and for a lot of artists of this generation, it has really been our whole lifetimes that we've seen this slow process. And in retrospect, you realize how deliberate it's been and how visible it was and how obvious, but you don't really see it when it's actually happening in the present because you're really optimistic that things will change. And that continued to happen for many, many years until now, what we see in Pakistan. Other divisions that happen in Pakistan are also the fact that it's comprised of four different provinces. Each province has a different language, a different culture, because Pakistan also has four borders. So it borders with India, it borders with Iran, it borders with China. And that's quite a lot of, being not a very big country, all these borders are very close, all these countries are very close. So it really, the culture and language, everything from these countries also filters in quite substantially into our daily lives and creates all the conflict that comes out of that. We'll talk more about it as we go along. It would be also nice for me if everyone were to just ask questions as and when it occurs, because it would be nice to make this more conversational. And I understand that, you know, that you may not know the details or even the more sort of simpler facts about a country so far away. So just ask so we can fill in those gaps, because a lot of the works reference a lot of things which may be very topical and unreadable to an audience here. The nuances might definitely be. I'll speak about the works as we go along, but if you have any questions, just ask. Other things, my position here today, the works that I'm going to be showing. One of the things that I'm trying to do is to, because you see all the video works here, I'm going to fill in the gaps by showing other kinds of practices. But despite the fact that Pakistan has a very small community of artists, it's extremely diverse. And it's impossible to show everything or to cover the whole territory. So I've selected a few works which represent certain gestures that artists are making, but also works that may raise questions, and questions that I've very deliberately, that I'm very deliberately trying to raise. And in some ways, I feel that I'm almost playing devil's advocate here by saying that that it's very difficult to present work to an international audience. For many, many years, Pakistan had no audience outside of Pakistan. Very few artists got to show outside. And what happened was that as interest internationally grew in India as a country and as an art center for the region, there was a spillover in Pakistan. And very slowly, curators started to visit Pakistan when they came to India. And we laugh about this, that in Pakistan is kind of like a flea market where, you know, when people are done with India, they come to Pakistan because it's a small country, but also because Pakistan has been in the media for so many other things that it has generated interest. There's always a surprise element where people say, oh, you know, what we hear about Pakistan is so different from the art being produced there. We didn't know that you could make art like this in Pakistan and the rest of that. There are lots of problems that just that creates. One, that when Pakistani artists show abroad, the question of audience becomes really problematic, because there is an inherent expectation that Pakistani artists will describe the politics of the country, because of course Pakistan has nothing else but the conflict that you hear about. And in some ways, artists do subscribe to that, because on the one hand, it awards them opportunities to show elsewhere. On the other, there's a lot of critique happening within Pakistan about exactly this, that Pakistan is looked at in a particular, Pakistani art is looked at in a particular way. There's a certain expectation of what constitutes Pakistani art. So it has... one of the things that Pakistan is known for is miniature painting, which somehow in this in the past, say, 20 years, became the kind of art that would represent Pakistan outside of Pakistan, because it's pure in its identity. It's Pakistani. And also, miniature painting, by its very nature, because it's portable, it's easy to manage, was easy for curators to take away. You can put 50 miniature paintings in your suitcase and take it away. And nobody would want to, say, ship sculpture to sculpture internationally. So miniature painting became that. And miniature artists, on the one hand, continue to make miniature paintings to show abroad, but also started critiquing it by working in other ways, making site-specific works which related to the miniature tradition, but also critiqued it at the same time. So what I'm also saying is that the critique within Pakistan is also that the expectation is of all artists to be sort of native informers. As Spivak, I think, says that the intellectual, the writer, the artist becomes the informer of, the country's sort of current situation.
Could I ask you just to go back to the comment that you just made before, maybe as a segue into the particular works? Earlier today we had been talking, and this was something we talked about, I guess, last September in Lahore, that in the United States, you know, I was relating how we're increasingly, the artist community is seeing society as a politicized society, and they're negotiating politics in their work. And you were trying to kind of explain that things are quite different in a way in relation to the political. The society is already politicized. There's already this understanding that the society is deeply politicized. Mm. And art making is already also deeply politicized, such that it's almost the reverse of the conversations happening here. You would almost argue for something more like a formalist, kind of definition.
There is a resentment, slightly. I mean, because intrinsically all the work that's produced in Pakistan is political. It can't be, because that you make work about your environment, you make work about whatever subject matter you choose, whether it's you're talking about language or aesthetics or culture or politics, it's what's closest to you. And all work, putting this work together and looking at it, you realize that all of it talks about these things. And so artists in Pakistan almost want the space to be able to not do that, to be able to produce more, deal with formal issues, which are also, as artists, the process is important to us, form is important to us, aesthetic issues, which are, apart from content, aesthetic issues are also important. Medium is important, abstraction, art for art's sake, whimsical ideas, poetry, all of these things are important. But when you show, I keep talking about showing internationally, and that's particularly because I'm speaking to an audience which is outside of Pakistan. When you show abroad, nobody's interested in Pakistani art that doesn't look Pakistani. And Pakistani art only looks Pakistani when it talks about hardcore politics or critiques something that people want to hear about. So that's problematic. Apart from that, there's also Pakistani artists often get represented in shows which are geographically branded. So you will be, every exhibition will have a subtitle that says contemporary art from Pakistan. And that, again, is problematic. And everyone wants to be mainstream, because all artists across the world deal with similar ideas, and they want to be in conversation with artists everywhere, rather than being branded as South Asian or Pakistani. Because that then it changes the reading of the work entirely. It changes the interpretation. And the work is only read through those channels. And nothing else. And of course, all the work you'll see not only deals with the content that we talk about, but it deals with so many other things. It dialogues with work produced historically and work being produced now. I mean, of course, we all know that globally work has become so accessible with the sort of revolution in communication. Works that you've never seen before, now you can, Google will reveal all kinds of work from everywhere that it didn't before. So the conversation is much closer, quicker.
So do you find it problematic, the subtitle for this exhibition, being geographic?
We talked about it. And the reason why it's Lahore and not Pakistan is because that's still all right, because it's kind of a realistic, title, because the work is from Lahore. But yeah, I mean, it is problematic that the work has to be that. But the other thing is that, how do you then describe it for people who want to be audience here, you also want to tell them what the work is mm-hmm. about or from. And mm-hmm. so how, I mean, this is something that needs to be negotiated as well. It's true for a lot of other countries. I mean, mm-hmm. I feel that, you know, the center always feels, and this place, like, there are many centers in the world today, but there is the politics of power and, you know, who does the naming. All of that is a big question. And all of it is being dialogued within art making in Pakistan.
But there's also the politics of the fact that Lahore is a city which, like, in the very expressions that we've talked about in Urdu, like Lahore, Lahore, like, there's always been a privileging of Lahore as an exceptional city within the larger context of Pakistan. Mm.
But these are nuances that only people living in Lahore, Pakistan, South Asia can understand. It's coming so far away, you lose so much in translation. How do you describe all of this? I feel, I mean, the reason why I also want to show work and talk about work is because the nuances of so much gets lost. I mean, you see the work and you see it simplistically in sometimes. I think it's important to talk about the details of, or just other ways of reading the work. It just expands our ways of looking, perhaps. When I talked about this idea of burden, it was my being here representing all of this. And of course, this is very limited. The interpretation will be very limited. You know, I'm not an ambassador of all of that. But to answer your question about video, accessibility to media has always been there. And technology is quite cheap in Pakistan in some ways. At least some level of technology. High-tech equipment or high-tech post-production is still expensive and inaccessible to most people. But the younger generation is very clued into, say, media, the internet, YouTube, Vimeo, all of that. And everyone has a space virtually. So all the students that we teach make video anyway, because everyone in Pakistan carries cell phones. It's one of the I don't know where it falls in the count of which countries have the most cell phone usage, but it's very near the top. Everyone in Pakistan carries cell phones, most of which have the capability to make video in one way or another. So a lot of students now just make, you know, bits and pieces of moving image. Other than that, video is very portable as an art form. So it may not be possible for us to bring sculpture over or paintings over. Video can be transported very easily on DVDs. So that it also awards you more opportunity to show elsewhere. But also, because works can be editioned, works can be shown in three places simultaneously. Whereas I can't show a sculpture in three places, a video work can be shown in three places. So it kind of makes it more desirable as a medium as well in some ways. But the video artists that I know always complain about the fact that video never works. There's always problems with showing video when you're moving from NTSC to PAL, or sound issues, or issues of corrupted media and, you know, whatnot. Jamming videos, technology not working, failing. So there are those problems as well. Does that answer your question? Somewhat? You can ask again at some point. Okay. Should I then begin to show the works? I'm going to start with showing the work of Aisha Khalid, who is quite a well-known miniature painter. I don't know if you know about miniature painting, but we won't really go into it because I'm not talking about historical miniature painting. But what's happened in Pakistan, almost as a movement, it's one of the big things that's happened in Pakistan around the 90s, is that there was a critique of traditional miniature painting from Persian or Mughal miniature painting. And what we call, somebody coined the term neo-miniatures, which are contemporary miniatures, or miniatures that are contemporized by the subject matter that they use, or the process, or the, you know, they don't use dyes or traditional colors, pigments, but they use gouache or watercolor sometimes, or a mixture of both, and lots of gold leaf. So they're very rich, they're very beautifully executed, they're very meticulously painted. And it's immense, the immense skill that you see in a miniature painting is, it always leaves you slightly seduced by it, even if you're at the same time critiquing it. There's a, the oldest art school in Pakistan is called the National College of Arts, which is in Lahore. They have a department of miniature painting, the only miniature painting department in the country. And that's where these artists are often trained. So Aisha Khalid is one such artist. But recently, for the Sharjah Biennale in 2011, she produced this shawl, which is called Kashmiri shawl. And when you look at the image from the back, each of these gold embroidery, the pattern, is constructed out of pins. So when you look at the back, there is, you know, it looks like this. And she talks about Kashmir is a disputed region. And since partition, India and Pakistan have been in conflict because of this region of Kashmir, which both countries are fighting to integrate. And so this is how she talks about it. This is another work by the same artist. It's a book project which was published by an organization called Raking Leaves, which is based in the UK. And Aisha produced a 300 or so page book called Name, Class, Subject, which is like a traditional copy book where you which you have in school to learn how to write the two languages that are spoken in Pakistan, Urdu and English, apart from provincial languages. So as a miniature painter, she worked in that tradition to paint each page. So each of these pages were originally a blank white sheet, and each of these has been hand-painted. So 300 pages are different from each other. They might look like this, but each of them has different slight differences. Also, she talks about the errors of production and misregistration. So, you know, where things don't align. And that's very common in books. And she talks about how she remembers from childhood using these books and, you know, pages being not quite right.
Is the shadow on the scene? Is that painted?
I think that's part of the photograph because the book is very, very thick. It's a 300-page book, and each page is different. So when you open it, I suppose if you're taking a photograph, the shadow will be there. It's a binding, as far as I know. This is the more traditional way of that she paints, the neo-miniature, which is close to patterning, voids, and the whole idea of sort of perceptual aesthetics. It's called Pattern to Follow. And this is another one of her works. This is much earlier. I don't know when this work is from, but her very early works when she graduated from school was for quite a few years looked like this, where she took a more feminist position on the idea of patterning and camouflage. And this is a woman sort of veiled, covered, but getting kind of lost in the pattern, in a sense. And it seems like there's a reflection from, you know, like the walls reflect or mirror what's happening within the space. This is quite small. I don't know exactly how small, but it would be about not much bigger than this. And so what you see, the detail of it is absolutely stunning when you actually look at it up close, because a miniature painting is also executed with a very, very fine brush. It's a squirrel hair brush of literally like four hairs, or, you know, so it's very time-consuming. It's done in layers. Sometimes something like this could take a month to execute. the same artist, sort of breaking out of the frame, breaking out of the miniature, again in critique of miniature itself. And this is called Viewpoint, and this was painted in a palace in Kabul in Afghanistan, where she was part of a residency. And it's actually painted on the floor next to a window. And here's a detail of it. This is Bani Abidi's work. We have three video works here of hers and two over there. She's a video artist who also works in photography. And these are really poignant works where she stages these photographs with people in the street. When you look at the title, you realize that these are minorities who live in Pakistan, so non-Muslim minorities. So by the name on the title, this is called Jerry Fernandez, you realize that this person is a non-Muslim. The reason why she's talking about that is the rest of the title tells you that it's Ramzan, which is the month of fasting, where all the Muslims are in their homes breaking their fast, and the minorities occupy the street. So it's a kind of humorous, but not quite, also sort of sad reminder of the persecution or the lack of position that minorities are lent. It's a kind of critique of the persecution of minorities within the country. And these are light boxes. So here's another one. And just the fact that they're doing menial, everyday tasks is a really poignant sort of...
Can I ask you to also speak a bit about public space? Public space not being a space that normally one can, at least from a secular standpoint, occupy or pass freely through, and what it means for these works, these figures to be situated in public space, in the street, and not in a car, but yeah.
Hmm. Well, talking about divisions again, there is no public space in Pakistan, which is occupiable in any form where you have any power over it. I could talk about this very correctly, but on the other hand, I could just speak as a resident of a city where people who actually walk in the street are people who cannot afford cars. And it's a really difficult space to speak about, to negotiate in many, many ways, because there's no pavements to walk. It's uncomfortable to walk in the street. There's many ways you can't. Reasons why you can't is just the reality of security and inhibition. It's a space that's very contentious in many, many ways. For women, for example, Bani talks about minorities. We'll see a bit more of this, and then I come back to... No, they're actual photographs that were staged. They're staged. Yes. This is what they actually look like, the light boxes.
There's no traffic, so it's like funny time of
the day. Yes, it was done very late at night, because otherwise it's not possible. As artists, I know that you do these projects almost like hit and run performances. You don't get permission. There's no way you'll get permission to do something like this. So you do it at a time when nobody's looking, and you do it quickly and you move away. So it's almost like a performative gesture as well.
But are the times listed, the actual times?
No. No, they're fictionalized. The reason why the time is given particularly is because it kind of elaborates what's going on. Usually in August 2008, this would be the time when the fast is broken. The fast is broken at sundown, about 10 minutes into the sun setting. And it changes. If it's winter, it would be earlier. If it's summer, it would be later. So this, because it's August, it's this kind of time. It kind of gives clues into why there's nobody in the streets. And it's actually true, and it's quite funny that when Muslims break their fast, the streets are completely clear because everyone is eating in their homes. So it's also funny. I mean, in its sort of tragic, it's also
the Gora Aya joint.
Sorry. This is another work by the same artist, again talking about another kind of division. Most homes in the upper class area or residential area of defense would have intercoms outside their homes. So, people coming in would ring the bell. And so it talks about inside and outside, another kind of division. And these are done in Illustrator. So again, beautifully drawn, but also, again, the same device of titling the work. Vibhani talks about one particular street and gives the house number to kind of gives clues into where and what it might be talking about. It could be talking about economic division of space.
Do we have her barrier series as well?
We also have that later. You want to talk about that?
Maybe if it comes up. She called these interpersonal communication devices.
No, they're illustration. They're drawings, digital drawings made on Illustrator.
They're printed on very beautiful Hamola rag in limited edition prints. I think the edition is about 6 or 10 each, and they're box sets.
Yeah, and they're a series. We might see. No, we don't see it. They are. They go together in a block of 9 or so prints together. This is another work by her, again, talking about lines drawn where sort of the idea of authority and, guiding the public as to which side and, control of the public by certain authorities. It's called Section Yellow. And these are collages. These are sort of photographs and then collaged to abstract. And
this has come out of our latest video work as well.
Yes.
It?
Yeah.
The one that's up there.
Yeah. Called The Distance from Here.
Has the creation of Pakistan is distinct from India, is that counter to the work of more women doing art? I know she had a lot of women doing art.
That's a really interesting question. Who's going to answer it?
You start and I'll join in.
Oh, we might have different opinions about it.
We might. You,
I know. All right. Well, being kind of jaded about it, I mean, traditionally in Pakistan, art has not been a economically viable profession. So the men all do things like they're doctors or engineers, or nuclear scientists, perhaps. So the women run all the art institutions. They run the galleries. They are the principals of all the art schools in the country. And that hasn't really kind of flushed out in recent years. It's going to take longer. There was a point a few years ago where it looked like Pakistani art was going to start being worth some money. And then things changed in the world just as that was breaking into Pakistan. So I don't know. But I mean,
I could
predominance
also
of women in the art school was, art schools as well. It's so true. What's the counter-argument to that?
I mean, the counter-argument could also be that women have been more courageous in art-making because I think I would say they're more evolved because they have had to fight more through their lives for many things, for space, for public space, for a voice. And so they train to be bolder in how they say things. And so often you see that the more successful artists would be women.
Yeah, also the point of change in the society. I mean, women are driving that. They have everything to gain. Men have it very easy. I mean, just the way that the male child
is treated in that society. So, yeah.
Pakistan's like different from other Muslim countries in the fact that, for instance, it had a woman president, you don't see that in a lot of
I mean, it's an interesting point, but I mean, people said about Benazir Bhutto that if the People's Party had put up a goat for nomination, it would probably have been elected. So, I mean, that's the kind of counter argument to that. And of course, she's been killed.
They're running for office in this country.
Oh, okay. So, I don't know, it's a tough one.
Another argument to something like that, because we teach in an art school, we also know that a lot of women join art school because it's an easy thing to do. They think it's sort of learning a skill. And so rather than getting a more difficult degree, it would be, you know, it's like learning how to paint is a hobby that you could pick up. And some of them evolve through those 4 years and become artists. Some don't. Some just sort of... And men don't join this program, again, like David said, for economic viability.
I mean, that's another thing that happens. I mean, the National College of Art, the big school in Lahore, produces plenty of male graduates, but within a few years, they've all gone into production with a TV channel or graphic design because they have to earn for their families very quickly. So you don't tend to end up with a lot of young male artists surviving after a few years.
Also, there's a culture of families supporting children throughout school, even adult children. So when when students come to college, they have their family supporting them economically to go through art school, which also means that the parents will have a say in what the person does or doesn't do. And of course, most parents would want their kids to be doctors or engineers because they know their investment will pay off.
Or even architects.
It's much more of a risk to be an artist. So here's the barrier series.
Yeah. This is a series of works she did based on sort of ad hoc barriers put up in Karachi outside things like the American Embassy. And what she's done on each one is she's given a geographical location for it. So this is actually outside the Iranian Embassy. Well, as a way to illustrate that, I work with sort of botanical things and botanical interventions in the city, and I was very intrigued by these sniper positions put up in trees around an area called Fortress, which belongs to the army, which is in the district in which we live. And there's no way I could photograph it from my car or anything like that, because I was told there were 14 different agencies basically guarding that area, and any cameras would, especially for someone like myself. But I ended up with a series of very blurred pictures, sort of driving past it at speed and trying to shoot it out of the window and not get caught.
Mm. But also what happens, like I talked about the fact that when artists are making work like this, they're also performing in the street because you're taking photographs or documenting something or even research. You never ask for permission because it won't be granted. So you quickly do it and get away. When we were doing this work that Aaron's talking about, it's called Five Ways Home. This was done 2 years ago when to get to our house, there are five different ways to get to our house, and each of them has a checkpost. And they're getting more and more elaborate, these checkposts. And you can't exactly take a camera and be visible because there's like searchlights at every checkpost. So we would tie a camera to the passenger seat and just like whiz through, pretending to, you know, just sort of...
For instance, the area in which we live is known as Cantonment, and all photography is banned. You're not allowed to take a camera onto the street. It's just assumed that it's just not something you can do. Mm. If you were to do it, they would take away the camera card and break it. If you were lucky, the mic could rescue as well. Mm.
But when Bani did this work, it was actually much earlier. This was done about 8 years ago, or so, 6 to 8 years ago, when these things had been around, but they were increasing. And she did it with a very light touch. I think what's nice about this work is the lightness and elegance with which she talks about a very huge issue, but in a very aesthetic sort of way. Highlighting it, but not with a heavy hand. And so making drawings of it rather than taking photographs, and calling it a design survey more than anything else. And within that, she gives clues to other hints at other things. This barrier, by the way, the blue one, blocks the whole road where the American embassy in Karachi is. So the road is completely inaccessible to the public just because the American embassy feels insecure being there.
So these are aren't fictionalized. These are actual.
They're actual
barriers.
Yeah.
And are they drawn on location?
They're drawn on Illustrator.
Okay, so they're drawn from memory.
They're drawn from photographs.
But you have to be sly about it.
Yeah. Well, she lives in Karachi. These were done in Karachi, which Karachi doesn't have a no photography policy.
Okay.
It's just the part of Lahore that we live in that has that policy.
No, but you can't actually photograph anything like this.
Yeah.
But because there's police presence everywhere. And if you were photographing it, you may do it, but then you would be asked questions and you would never ask.
Yeah.
I mean, nobody would
You wouldn't photograph the American embassy for sure.
No, of course. But there's also so much suspicion. Even if you were to photograph it, you will be suspect. You will be questioned. Your photographs may be looked at and removed or whatever. So, I mean, in some cases, sure, if it's a quieter street, you could photograph something like this, but not on a main road.
Mm. And generally, you wouldn't want to get into it.
Yeah.
Unless you're crazy.
This is another miniature painter who recently, for the Sharjah Biennale, did a site-specific work which looked like this. It's a huge courtyard. And so over a period of 2 weeks or so...
Ten days.
He painted, as a miniature painter, this is him working on each little section of it. He painted the whole courtyard with the help of one more person.
What has come out of was an experience that he had about 2 years back in the market next to our house, which is known as Are Bazaar, which is interestingly derived from the colonial presence. It was a Royal Artillery Bazaar under the British colonial rule. And there was a terrible suicide bombing there. In fact, there were two. And he was just about shopping there with his children. He just missed it. It almost blew the windows out of our house as well. And that's the kind of bloodbath that is left when a large number of people are taken down by a suicide bomber. In this case, they were all coming out of prayers on a Friday. So that's where the work has come from.
One could critique a work like this in many ways. I think within Pakistan, the critique that's happening, on the one hand, it's the personal that becomes the political. And so it's really the reality of one's life that gets illustrated or demonstrated. On the other, it is the most obvious thing that will have an opportunity to be shown. So it becomes what we spoke about earlier, where you become the informer. And so if you look at it very cynically, it's also talking about blood in a bloody way would be the most obvious trope that an artist would use to talk about something like this. I suppose it's unfair to compare the two works, but security barriers
is a much quieter work, a much more subtle work.
Yeah. But then the experience is different as well for something like this. The same artist, Imran Qureshi, with a more traditional approach to miniature painting. These he calls moderate enlightenment. And he teaches at the National College of Arts. So what he's doing is that he's painting students that he interacts with every day. But what he talks about here is the subtle changes in the student's position, where where a normal looking student would suddenly be wearing the trousers slightly higher, which means that their religious affiliation is changing towards a more less secular. And whereas everything else is normal, there'll suddenly be a beard, which would also talk about your affiliation. Here, this is also Imran Qureshi in the same palace of the Queen's palace, doing a site-specific work, which is more poetic, which is more, I suppose, formally driven. This is Hamra Abbas with a sculpture called Woman in Black. And this came out of, again, a major political event that changed the contemporary history of Pakistan, where the government of Musharraf took a stand against a group of women who had held a hostage a mosque in Islamabad. And they were attacked and by the government agencies and made to surrender. And that kind of accelerated the change in Pakistan in about 2006. I think it was 2006. I have to check with David. So this is kind of a kind of homage to the women who were sort of taking power in the hands. But also Hamra looks at it in a kind of the idea of the superhero, the idea of comic books, the idea of she draws from contemporary film and animation to sort of look at the form of the work. This is another work by the same artist called Lessons in Love, and this is kind of an illustration of the Kama Sutra. And these works are made out of plasticine, which means that the weight of the work will change the work over time. And so one figure sitting on top of the other will actually sit kind of collapse more into the other work because they're pliable, it's plasticine. This is by the same artist. This is also by Hamra Abbas, and this is a recent work that she did for, she won the Abraj Capital Art Prize in 2011, and what she created with that is a stained glass window, a traditional stained glass window with the same icon of the woman embedded within a more sort of, it's stained glass, but it's the subject matter is very much drawn from miniature painting, Mughal miniatures. This is a detail. This is an artist who's based in Karachi called Adila Suleiman, and she works with popular urban culture. Aesthetically, she sort of dialogues with that, but also always using domestic utensils, creating these again funny works. In this case, because I don't have other works by her in this presentation, I should explain that we talked about public space, we talked about people walking in the street or not walking in the street, owning cars or not owning cars. It's very, very, the larger population gets around on motorbikes because they are economically more viable as vehicles. And what you see often in the street is parents with 4 children on one small motorbike, and which is very dangerous, obviously. And so, apart from being illegal, which doesn't matter because people have no choice often, so they will have, a child in their arms, 2 sitting in front, 1 sitting in the back. And Adila often makes these work sculptures, which are kind of safety devices for children or women or men, because women sit side saddle on motorbikes, which is also very risky with two children in their arms sometimes. So she makes these helmets with domestic utensils, something like this. And she's also done very funny things where she's made a kind of seating arrangement for five children. So in the back of your motorcycle, you could have these tiered a tiered cradle, the kind of like... this is more sort of slightly later work where she sort of looks at ideas of body armor, things like chastity belts even, but drawn from these ideas, again, as protection devices for women. So more of a feminist stance in something like this. These are the pattern, the imagery, the color is drawn from vehicle art. So buses and trucks and rickshaws in Pakistan are painted beautifully. And there's a lot of attention paid to, you know, by owners of these vehicles to make them look like brides almost. But there is a very particular, very long tradition of, you know, this imagery as well. And each symbol has a long history of meaning through literature and art. And so she uses that, collaborating with painters who would traditionally paint these vehicles. This is also another one of her works, more recent. And this too. This is Faiza Butt, who is, she's based in London, but works in Lahore and in London, shows in both places. And this work is actually done in a pointillist kind of technique using markers on mylar paper. A very, very fine, very crafted. This whole idea of craft is another recurring theme in Pakistani art because there is such a heavy tradition of very beautifully crafted things. Artists tend to go back to it on and off to illustrate or critique ways of doing things, whether it's kind of low-tech or whether it's crafted in this way. There's always this dialogue between the two. This is a more sort of whimsical work by an artist called Ehsanul Haq. Sort of talking about the vulnerability of everyday objects. And he brings into the gallery things from the environment. So he would recreate a construction site within the gallery and things like that. So taking found objects and making these whimsical sculptures by putting two or three things together, which are very sort of abstract but also absurd sometimes and you know, lightly put together. This is another of his works called Zero Point, with these kinds of conflict of, you know, nullifying this conversation between the two fans. So it kind of, there's nothing that happens when they're so close together.
Huma, can I ask you a question about the previous work?
Mm-hmm.
Could you talk about the ecological? Is the ecological emerging as a theme? Like, I remember when I was there, Wasim Ahmed's work, in which he had...
Whose work?
Wasim Ahmed.
Yeah.
Who had basically taken plants and... through cutouts, kind of superimposed, burned literally weapons into the plant itself. It seems to me that a number of the works that I was thinking of, they had an ecological kind of dimension. Is that emerging?
I wouldn't say so. I think it's so far away from... There isn't a big tradition. Of course, artists comment on it on and off, but... I think the bigger issues in Pakistan are so huge that this takes a backseat still, despite the fact that there is, you know, the dialogue is the bigger dialogue in the world today.
Mm-hmm.
somehow artists haven't taken that on yet. Also because Pakistan is at a very different stage in this whole conversation, considering that only recently we started importing styrofoam to pack burgers in. So it's a kind of regression of
So like David's, for instance, his collaboration with Rafe concerning the gondolas, and this is something that in a way doesn't find its legibility necessarily within the cultural conversation.
No, there's very few artists talking about that. I mean, it's just beginning to happen. Uh-huh. It's not like the rest of the world where there is a sort of, you know, groups of artists talking, you know, actively talking about climate change or ecology. This is also Ehsan's work. So it's a tethered chicken. And of course, can't reach the food often.
How long would something like that be up?
He's very, we asked him this question recently, and how he actually does something like this. This was up for a week, and he would take the chicken back home every evening, bring it back every morning. There was also a question of somebody wanting to purchase this work. And there was this whole dialogue about how does one, you know, buy a chicken. Yeah, exactly.
But this droppings, things like that.
What about what?
Droppings. Like during the course of the day.
That's a good question. Ehsan recently, the same artist, had a donkey in a gallery. And that was a huge problem through the day, apart from other problems. So he does play with this idea of ridiculous, absurd questioning of life and control by dislocating something from space outside. Bringing it into the gallery, but also playing very aesthetically with it, considering he's almost painting with the food, for example. So there is that kind of sense to it as well. I don't know if the documentation is I'm not sure if he looks at it as the work. If the photograph now is the work, I'm not sure. I think for him, the chicken's performance through the day was the work. And this happens to be the documentation that he will have as a kind of artifact that remains after.
It's also very, as a graphic, mm-hmm. I mean, it can't not strike one as an artful.
Sure. Photography. This is an artist called Amber Hamad, and she works with herself, multiplying herself in all the works that she does. So I'll show you her works and then we can talk about it a bit more. She's very much somebody who's worked in the tradition of photography and the idea of Photoshop. And the question of what is real and what is not. You know, with Photoshop, everything has come into question. Like everything in the media is now questionable. You know, is this photograph real or is it photoshopped is a question that we've all, you know, asked. And so, especially with news, especially with things that are in the media, this is a constant battle. In contemporary times, I feel in Pakistan, because things move so fast, one feels that you never know the truth about things. You never really find out what happened, because there are so many different kinds of truths all the time. Whose point of view are you going to trust? And particularly with politics in the country now, different media agencies, different government bodies, everyone, the affiliations change so quickly that there's no way for a reader to grasp the truth of a situation. So I think she deals with a lot of those issues. This is all her again. Again, all her. Another whole aspect of art, contemporary art in Pakistan, or not so contemporary art in Pakistan, is calligraphy, which we haven't spoken about. Like miniature painting, there's a huge tradition of calligraphy, and which is often associated with religious text, just because religious books are written in a particular way, manuscripts are written in a particular way. This artist, Muzammil Rahil, kind of critiques it by making it more banal, by removing it, extracting it from its religious context, and just writing, calligraphically, beautifully writing meaningless text. So this is called Man of Many Words, and the whole figure is constructed. So the image on the right is a detail of what's happening here. This is again 1/30, which you'll see. So it's all pattern calligraphy that becomes pattern text, but meaningless text. Another thing that happens in Pakistan, again, another kind of division which we haven't sort of touched upon so much, is language. It's a bilingual society. There's, the legacy of colonial rule leaves a smattering of English everywhere. But who speaks English and who doesn't speak English divides the society completely. Again, just as there's economic division, or which gives you access to a different kind of education, a different kind of literature, a different kind of experience, obviously. So this work sort of critiques that. The text is written in Urdu. It's not Arabic, which is what's associated often with traditional calligraphy. It's written in Urdu, but when you read it, it's English. In Urdu, it says, please read it carefully. So that's what this text actually says, please read it carefully. So it's a whole critique of the idea of calligraphy. I should talk a little bit about the state of calligraphy. In 1978, when General Ziaul Haq took over the country, the first military government, artists working in calligraphy were given a lot of state support, and a lot of state commissions went to artists working in calligraphy. A lot of women artists working at that time say that all the men started doing calligraphy, and the women removed themselves from that that tradition entirely, just as a form of resistance. So there is that whole division that happened as well in the art world. This is a very young artist who is still a student at the university that we teach, Beacon House National University, who has lived in America for a large part of her life. And what she does, and her family moved back as a kind of post-migratory situation back to Pakistan. And she takes American paintings, for example, this painting by James Whistler, called Arrangement in Grey, but it's also called The Artist's Mother. And she appropriates and stages photographs illustrating that. So a kind of switch in her life. This is another painting called American Gothic, which you Here it is, the painting. And this is a Jackson Pollock approach created. This is an artist called Muhammad Ali Talpur. And he comes from the province of Sindh, from a family that has for years worked with fabric. So weaving and making applique patterns. And he sort of appropriates that idea in drawing. So each of these works is actually meticulously drawn lines. And all the work is called it's called lakirin, which is a Sindhi word for line. And all the work is line one, line two, line three. So here are the drawings. And sometimes they're very, very large. David, do you want to add anything to this?
No, I don't think so. I will wait on it.
This is an artist called Heather Lee Jan, also using Illustrator to make these comic book pages, which are sort of illustrative of absurd political scenarios.
And also is the Madrasa kid, the potential suicide bomber being promised
heaven.
Heaven and Huris.
Are they single pages?
These are single pages, yeah. This is one of my works from 2008. This is a work that was commissioned by the Pakistani Pavilion in the Dubai Art Fair in 2008. And what I did was two suitcases. I don't know if I have... There were two suitcases. This one was called 1001 Stories. And it was a kind of homage to the construction workers, Pakistani construction workers who had migrated to Dubai as laborers in the 70s. And so what I did was I took these, which are called Muslim showers. These are hand bidets. And the common term for them is Muslim showers. And I kind of put them in the form of a palm tree and put speakers in the heads here. Like in this head, there'd be a very small speaker. So one side was interviews with people living in Pakistan who desperately want to go to Dubai to earn a lot of money, and because they think that Dubai, of course, is the ultimate paradise. And the other speaker would have interviews that I did in Dubai of Pakistanis who had lived there for many years, but desperate to come back home. So again, a kind of nullifying of dreams of wealth. And everything in this work is coated in yellow brass, sort of like a gold coating. This is an earlier work, also another suitcase, because I was talking about sort of borders, invisible borders, travel, and the fact that you only realize there's a border when you are stopped. Otherwise, you just go through life without realizing that there are sort of restrictions. There's a kind of, this is called "But What Is Your Country, Madam?" Again, these Muslim showers, which are snake-like. And the suitcase itself has, like a jewelry box, it has these recesses where this is made to sit, but it doesn't quite sit, and it kind of defiantly, snake-like, jets out of the suitcase. And the back of the suitcase is embossed with the title, "But What Is Your Country, Madam?" A kind of like a branding of skin, because this is made out of vinyl, it's Rexine, and it's pliable, so it kind of has this possibility of being very skin-like. This is Ruhi Ahmed with these needles, which are no man's land, again talking about borders in a different way. This is another work by Farida Batul called Line of Control. It's a lenticular print. So as you move the hand, both hands move and touch. And again, it's a personal metaphor for a geographical and political border. This is David's.
Hello. Can you talk more about Frida's? I know there's a bit of a segue into another conversation. Could you just maybe speak very briefly about Frida's research and some of her scholarship, which I thought was actually quite extraordinary. It kind of upended my, let's say, American stereotypes about what one could do in Pakistan. I mean, particularly the research, the field work
Okay, I don't know details about it, so I may make mistakes, but I broadly know about her research. She's enrolled in a PhD program, and she's always been interested in the idea of masculinity. And her research is quite phenomenal, because what she does, there's a big industry for pornographic material in Pakistan, which is a kind of, I don't have the word for it, but it's a kind of pot of images and material from everywhere, from Europe to Russia to the US to Pakistan to within Pakistan. And she actually goes and interviews editors and the photographers of this material and sellers of pornographic material, and has these conversations with them about the idea of, you know, of the audiences, their reaction, how they actually make it. As a woman doing something like that in Pakistan is anywhere else in the world as well, it would be quite difficult. But in a country which is already very inhibited, it's quite phenomenal the kind of information she's able to get, and people are willing to talk. It's just that she needs to do it quite slowly to gain enough trust and to present herself in a way where people take her seriously and know that she is doing this towards a particular kind of academic goal. But so this is one of the aspects of her researching sort of the position of masculinity within the country. There's a lot more to it, of course,
it's not unrelated to this work either, which also probes lines of intimacy and intimacy that's not supposed to be public.
This is David Ainsworth's work, who is not here again, and it's called Hyde Park Kashan, and David takes an ancient carpet with foot traffic of years and years of foot traffic, so it's kind of rubbed down into a really thin sheet of fabric almost, and the confrontation of two different kinds of paradise in a sense, because the Persian carpet is also, the patterning of it is a narrative of paradise, Garden of Eden. And what he does is that he embroiders the map of Hyde Park on it, which was also a kind of, well, the Versailles work is more so, but this is also a kind of... David, you should talk about this.
It's so much better if someone else talks about your work.
And
it's from 1862. It was one of the great international exhibitions. And so it was very much a point where the British Empire was speaking about its dominion of a quarter of the world, and all kinds of things would have been showing there, including the Singer 733, which was used for embroidering the... Serpentine Lake. But I mean, it's a dialogue of garden, of kind of utopian garden spaces, and they're both kind of privileged spaces, because the Royal Park is also a privileged space. And what is the international exhibition there has now become the edge of the Albertopolis, which Albert having died the year before. So it's based on a Stanford fragment map, a Stanford map fragment, which I found. Most of the road names refer to monarchy and power.
It's also sort of a palimpsest where you wipe out one history with another, or
maybe one history grows out of another. This is a point in history where the English garden style was sweeping into the continent and sort of overshadowing Italian Baroque and the formality, a different age, a different landscape. This is a much older carpet. A Kaman is 150 years old, and it's really worn down to a sort of Turin shroud of a carpet. But the charbagh is still there in the middle of it. And this is Versailles from 1742, Jean Delagrive's rendition of Versailles, when Versailles was already 100 years old. But I mean, it has very strong correlations with Islamic patterning. And Le Notte was kind of exposed to a lot of that with his residency with Simon Vouet, who had studied in Constantinople in his youth. So there's all kinds of correlations there.
This is Rishim Sayed's work. The panel, I don't have a detail of it. It would have been nice to see that. The panel in the center is a Karakul fabric, which is a kind of woolen wool that's derived from an unborn kid, a goat kid.
It's the fur of a fetus, basically.
Yeah, the fur of a fetus.
Yeah.
A goat fetus.
Yes.
And this fabric is what is used to make the cap that the founder of Pakistan
used to like to wear.
Eventually, when he became Pakistani.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that it kind of is an identity. And so she critiques it from an ethical point of view of the identity of Pakistan. Apparel identity of
Pakistan. Yeah, not only Pakistan, I think it's about machismo as well.
But what do you think of this salon type presentation of this?
I think there's a kind of post-colonial reference going on as well. I think it's family history. I mean, I think everybody works at the autobiographical in some way or another.
And this one? I mean, I'm asking you because you're sort of...
What?
Thinking and looking, writing about it.
Am I? No, I didn't write about it. But I mean, I think partially here there is a landscape school in Lahore, which is very much about livestock and landscape, about the rich feudals commissioning kind of paintings of their real estate. And I think there's, partially that's in the dialogue. Don't you? Rishim has just won the Abraj Prize this year from Pakistan, which is the world's biggest art prize currently.
This is Rashid Rana's work, one of his earlier works from 2002, where he sort of critiques the idea of the miniature, but also uses it through... So what... Okay, there's a lot to say about this one. I mean, formally, he works with the idea of photography, but critiques the idea of digital imagery, the idea of the two-dimensional... I actually will show the detail first. So this image is a composite of these pixelated images of billboards across Lahore, and it forms this identity of Lahore, again, as a Mughal center, by using the portrait of Emperor Jahangir, which is a very common image that you see in Mughal miniature painting, and using this gilded frame to kind of, a value-added sort of traditional. But the reality of Lahore, the contemporary reality of Lahore, condensed into something else. what Lahore would like to see itself as and what Lahore really is. This is also one of his recent works called The Anatomy Lessons, again using sort of this kind of pixelated.
Is this Rashid or is it Basir?
It's Rashid.
Okay.
This is also his work, also from last year. These are very large photographs, again compiled with images, art historical images, to then make these bookshelves. This is also Rashid's, called Red Carpet. And this is comprised of images from the main slaughterhouse in Lahore. And this is what it looks like. That's it. Thank you for your patience.